The Springboks have defeated Ireland in Dublin for the first time since 2012. And today, you are going to get a front row seat to my top 5 full-time observations. But before we do that, let me remind you about the Supersport Bok Dream Team initiative. You can help select the ultimate Springbok team over the last 3 decades. The Bok Dream Team is in celebration of 30 years of Springbok excellence since winning the 1995 Rugby World Cup. You'll find a link in the description area as well as a QR code on your screen. From there, you'll be able to select your best box. There are great prizes up for grabs, courtesy of Supersport. Your World of Champions is also celebrating 30 years this year, bringing you some of the most cherished rugby moments along the way. Vote now and remember to tune in for all the rugby action. So let's get started then with number 1. I want to talk a little bit about Sacha Feinberg Ngome Zulu. Now, surprisingly to me, he was actually considered as one of the 4 candidates for player of the match. Now, you guys, if you've been watching this channel for a while, will know that I am a big Sacha fan. However, I don't think he had his best game in green and gold against the Irish in Dublin. That said, I do think he was very lucky to escape a yellow card. Now, let's talk about what happened here, right? You had Tommy O'Brien in the right-hand side of the field going for the corner. He had already been tackled by Peter Steph du Toit. Now, there are parallels here with what happened last week with Franco Mostert and Paolo Garbisi. Now, remember that last week we saw Franco Mostert attempting to lower himself. We saw him lean in with the shoulder. Now, the point that I was making last week is that if you lean in with the shoulder and you are on the inside of the player, it's impossible to wrap with this arm. That was the point that I was trying to make. I want to tell you guys something, and I will always admit if I am wrong. I'm not perfect. I know a little bit, but I don't know everything. And what happened last week is, and you must remember that I don't see the same TV feeds that you guys see. I'm watching these games on the TV as well, but I don't see the same feeds that you necessarily see. I only saw it on a replay at a later stage after I had already recorded my episode for last week. And what happened was the following. And that is when you saw it from the other angle. Yes, you could see Franco Mostert like this, but you could see that with his left arm, there was actually an attempt to wrap. So that should have been a mitigating factor, and that's why it shouldn't have been a red card, and rightfully, it was rescinded. Now, what did we see with Sacha Feinberg Ngome Zulu on Tommy O'Brien? Well, did he attempt to lower himself? I thought so. Did he attempt to wrap? Now, here's the thing, okay? Did he attempt to wrap? And if Franco Mostert attempted to wrap, and as I say, having seen that second replay, I do believe that he did, then Sacha Feinberg Ngome Zulu, with the left arm, also attempted to wrap. Was it a feeble attempt at a wrap? Was it a nominal attempt at a wrap? It doesn't matter. The fact is, was it an attempt at a wrap? And the answer is yes. And I think that that is why he escaped the yellow card. Even so, again, we're seeing Sacha almost in this sort of position, you know, with the sort of shoulder to chest, which is exactly the same thing as what happened with Franco Mostert. And I hope I'm being clear here. I believe that that is the reason why Sacha escaped at least a red card, and certainly a 20-minute red card. And I won't lie to you, I think what happened with Franco Mostert last week and what happened the week before with Luit de Jager and all the anger and the unhappiness around that, I think that that contributed towards the referee perhaps not wanting to give South Africa at least not an early yellow card for an incident of that nature. Let's move on to number 2. Yellow cards. Now, there were a plethora of them at the Aviva Stadium. I think that's an understatement. I mean, at one stage, Ireland were playing with 12 men on the field, and there was criticism as to the Springboks not taking full advantage of playing 15 against 12, 15 against 13, 15 against 14 for large portions of the match. But we'll come to that a little bit later. Right now, I want to address those yellow cards, and let's start with the 20-minute red. Now, James Ryan, in my opinion, is a very, very lucky boy. I think it could have been a permanent, and maybe even should have been a permanent red. Picture the situation. We have a ruck. James Ryan is coming to clear the ruck, and he basically hurls himself into the ruck. It's just, there's no attempt to rap, there's no attempt to tackle, there's no attempt to steal. It's basically him flying in there and trying to bulldoze his way. I mean, if you call that cleaning, okay, fine, you know, be my guest. But guys, let's be honest, that is illegal stuff. And when it happened, I knew immediately that Ryan was in big trouble. And to the credit of Matthew Carley, the referee, I felt that he did the right thing. Give him a yellow and let's go to the bunker and let the bunker make the decision. Unlike what we saw last week with James Dolman handing out a straight red to Franco Mostert. Okay, fine. It was upgraded to a 20-minute red, and that meant that Ireland only had to be down to 14 men for 20 minutes. Look, there's so much going on these days with referees and law interpretations and this sort of thing that I personally feel like nobody knows what's going on anymore. I even saw last night on X respected players and referees from the past admitting that they don't even know what's going on anymore. And I feel like if men like Brian Abana and Nigel Owens are telling us on social media that they don't even know what's going on anymore when it comes to the laws, well, then how are people like you and I supposed to know what is going on? And a lot of this stuff is open to interpretation. We know that. And also, if I can say something about Carley, I actually felt that he tried to keep the game flowing. I felt that he did a lot in this match to keep the game flowing and to keep it going. And to that end, okay, yes, you can argue that Sacha Feinberg and Gomezulu was lucky not to get a yellow. I think James Ryan 100% was justified. I think he was lucky that it wasn't upgraded to a permanent red. But then if you have a look at some of the other yellow card offences for illegal scrummaging, for offside, the cynical play, most of that stuff, let's be honest, the referee had no option. I don't blame him. I know that there were a lot of Irish fans who felt that he was spoiling the game. If anyone was spoiling anything, I thought it was Caelan Doris. But again, that's a separate matter. And you could argue that when you're down to 13 or 14 men, you have to do what you have to do to keep your team in the game. But if we have a look at some of the other yellow cards, like, for example, Andrew Porter, who I'm delighted to see was refereed correctly in this match. Tommy O'Brien himself was given a yellow card. We saw Sam Prendergast showing yellow. And even Jack Crowley. So at one stage, it certainly felt like it was getting out of hand. But again, honestly, I don't think we can blame the referee here. I genuinely felt that the yellow cards that he dished out were justified. And guys, let me throw something else at you. We all know when it comes to collapsing a 5-meter scrum and the awarding of a penalty try that it's kind of the law that it should be an automatic yellow card. Well, our referee, I thought, was very generous towards the Irish by not penalizing those scrum collapses as much as he probably should have, not awarding additional yellow cards. I mean, we were in farcical territory. Can you imagine if we were playing 15 against 11 or even 10 at one stage? Again, farcical circumstances. I don't blame the referee. I felt like in many cases he had no option. And it's like, well, I don't want to give you another yellow card, but you need to help me here too. And I feel like that is what was really going on. So I don't blame him. I thought he did his best to keep the game flowing. And you know what? Just right at the end, because it kind of felt like we were being left out as far as the yellow cards are concerned, Grant Williams was also showing a yellow card. Because again, you know, everyone else is getting a yellow. We were certainly beginning to feel left out ourselves. Let's move on to point number 3. Springbok power. Now, here I want to specifically talk about the scrums. And while I'm saying this, I realize I didn't even mention Paddy McCarthy getting a yellow card. Have I mentioned everyone who got a yellow card? Guys, I mean, the list is endless, isn't it? But let's move on to Springbok power, particularly in the area of the scrum. We were magnificent. You know, we said beforehand that men like Buan Fenter and Thomas du Toit have certainly earned their stripes at Springbok level. But we felt that it would be better if Oxenchair was there. And certainly with the way that it is at the moment, Thomas starts and then Wilco Lowe comes on later as part of the bomb squad. But I tell you what, I thought in the first half that Thomas du Toit was the best player on the park. I thought Buan Fenta was magnificent from a scrummaging point of view. Malcolm Marks was a beast. And just overall, we dominated every single scrum. I'm trying to remember, there were quite a few scrums in this test match, and I think that there may have been maybe two scrums where it looked like there was parity. Every single other scrum, we pushed them backwards. And in many cases, it was dominant. It looked like a tier one team scrumming against the tier two side at times. And I understand that Ireland didn't always have all eight on the field. There were times when Bundy Archie came in and joined the pack, you know, a la Andre Esterhazen. And we're going to talk a little bit about that later in this episode as well. But the Springboks were outstanding in the scrum. I thought we were good in the lineouts. And then we're going to talk about the breakdown in a moment as well. But in terms of scrum dominance, it was a thing of beauty. One of the criticisms that we saw from South African fans after this match is that the Springboks didn't win the test match by enough points, especially given our dominance up front. Now, I'm going to throw one or two things at you here very quickly. One, yes, I thought we were outstanding in the first half, but in the second half, we did drift off a little bit. A lot of that also had to do with the incredible amount of fight that we saw from Ireland, which I'm going to mention later in this episode. Another thing, and I mentioned referee Matt Carley earlier, where I felt that he was very generous towards the Irish with those 5 meter scrums and the amount of those that they were collapsing, and that there may very well have been additional yellow cards and even penalty tries. And by my count, we could easily have had an additional 2 penalty tries. Add 2 penalty tries to the score, suddenly it's not 24-13, it's 38-13. And I don't think anybody would be complaining then. Let me throw one other thing at you. If it was 38-13, perhaps the spirit of the Irish would have broken. Perhaps an additional 1 or 2 yellow cards would have opened up so much space that we may have gone and made it 45, 52, even 59. Now, I don't want to get that far ahead of ourselves, and I grant you that there's too much speculation when you start talking like that. But I'm just trying to give you an indication of our dominance, and I don't think that 24-13 told the true story. We were better than 11 points, better than them, if that makes sense. Having said that, we can still be satisfied. It's a first win in Dublin against the Irish since 2012. And perhaps now, finally, that monkey is also off our back. Remember, they'd beaten us 4 of the last 5 times coming into this one? It was time for us to put one over them. And we did that, and I was satisfied with the way that we did it. Let's move on to point number 4. Breakdown and jackaling. This is another area where I was particularly pleased with the way that we played, especially in that first half. Guys, in the past, we've seen men like Quagga Smith come on and just do brilliant things in very short spaces of time. And when you think of jackaling, you would think of Malcolm Marks for sure. But you know what we were seeing in this first half? We were seeing Buan Fenta. We were seeing Thomas du Toit. We were seeing Jasper Visser arrive at the breakdown and win ball for us. We were seeing them tackle a player, a ruck is formed, and before anything else can happen, Thomas du Toit being a prime example of this, leaping up at breakneck speed and winning the ball back from a jackal. It was a thing of beauty. And I know that a lot of guys prefer the backline players, or, you know, they don't always see the good work or the hard work put in by the forwards. Guys, I was feeling all kinds of happiness just watching Thomas du Toit make a tackle, get up at breakneck speed, jackal, and win the ball back for us. It was unbelievable. And it was wonderful to see. Buan Fenta did similar things. Malcolm Marks, what a beast. Let's talk about Malcolm just for a second. Last night it was also announced that he is the World Rugby Player of the Year. My biggest congratulations to Malcolm. It is well deserved. Personally, I must admit, I thought that Oxenchair was going to win the award. But you know what? Can you argue? Can you really argue with Malcolm? He has been one of the best hookers in the world for a very long time now. And this is recognition, I think, of years of excellence rather than just one 12-month period of magnificence. So congratulations to Malcolm. He is one of my favorites in the team. He really is. And as I've seen somebody else say before, and I kind of stole this line, so if you're watching this and you said it first, you know that I am borrowing this from you. I am also a Malcolm Marxist. And let's move on to point number five, the future of Ireland. Coming into this match, a lot of people felt that Ireland were on the decline. A lot of people said that maybe they peaked a year ago, maybe a year and a half, even 2 years ago, that that was peak Ireland. A lot of their players are now getting older, and they're not really replacing them with new, exciting youngsters. Well, some of that might be true. Johnny Sexton, for example, is no longer part of the setup. But you know what? Sam Prendergast looks okay to me. So does Jack Crowley. In fact, personally, I like Crowley more than I like Prendergast, but that's just a personal opinion. Based on what I saw last night, I think that this Irish side is still in good shape. Were they beaten by a better side on the night? I believe they were. Would they have beaten South Africa if it was 15 against 15 or even 14 against 14 at times or at various times, 15 v 14 or 14 v 15, if you know what I mean? It's impossible to say. We'd only be speculating and there's no real way of knowing. One thing I will say, guys, is that I do believe that the very best teams, and I include Ireland in this list, South Africa, France, New Zealand, and I think England are now joining that group, and perhaps even Argentina should be spoken of in this light as well. The very best teams, when they are reduced to 14 men, whether it be for 10, 20, or longer, we often see that they, not necessarily that they play better without the 15th player on the field, but the other 14 men are galvanized. And what ends up happening is everybody finds within them the ability to give an extra 10%. And I firmly believe that that is what happened in the 2023 Rugby World Cup final. I know a lot of All Blacks supporters like to moan and say that we only beat them because they had 14 men on the field. I like to point out that if Richie Mwanga and or Geordie Barrett had kicked their kicks successfully, they would have been in the lead going into the last 10 minutes. So whose fault is that? But having said that, I believe that if Sam Kane was not red carded early on in that test match, I think the Boks would have won by more. I think the absence of their captain and the fact that they were down to 14 for so long galvanized them, and everyone gave a little bit more. They found it within themselves to give that little bit more, and that is actually what made the match closer than I think it would have been otherwise. And I think that that also applied to Ireland last night. I don't think anybody can accuse the Irish of not giving 100%. I'm not a fan of saying things like 110 or 120% because I think that 100 is an absolute number. But I suppose in South African high school matriculation results, you can get 108%. So I suppose there is, you can break that 100% limit. But everybody was able, everybody did give that little bit more. And you could see that they were galvanized. Everybody gave it everything they had. So to me, talk of an aging Irish team that is over the hill, past its peak, beyond its powers, I think that perhaps last night we saw that that kind of talk may very well be premature. They fought gallantly. They defended like Trojans. Were they guilty of some dark arts? Of course they were. But you know what? Every team in the world is guilty of dark arts. It's just that some of it is a little bit more blatant than others. Some of it is a bit more obvious to the eye, especially the opposition fans' eyes. Caelan Doris, for example, I thought was spoiling throughout the entire test match. But then I ask myself, if my team was down to 14, 13, even 12 men, and my captain or one of my talismanic players was behaving in that manner, doing everything that needs to be done to stop the opposition from getting through, would I be complaining? And so with that in mind, I don't think that this is the end of the Irish story yet. I saw a side last night that should easily be capable of reaching the World Cup quarterfinals in 2 years' time, maybe even the semifinals for the first time. Can they do more than that? We don't know. Again, if it was 15 against 15 for the majority of the match, we may have been able to get a better sense. It is true that they were not at their best in the Six Nations. Part of me wonders if that was because Andy Farrell wasn't around as the head coach. They were, let's be honest, easily beaten in Chicago by the All Blacks. You could put that down to early season, although it's not really early season, but early November, early autumn rust. But they certainly put the Wallabies in their place. And again, you take all the cards out of the equation last night, and who knows what may have actually happened. Having said that, I do want to make it very clear that, in my opinion, all of those cards were wholly justified. And from that point of view, the Irish can only have themselves to blame. But what's your take? Do you think that the Springboks showed their class and secured a good victory, and all the various factors that played into it means that we should be very satisfied with what happened? Or are you concerned that the Springbok team wasn't ruthless enough, wasn't efficient enough, and should have put 35, 40, maybe even 50 points on the board against an Irish side that had its backs to the rope in a significant manner? Let me know in the comment section down below. And just before I go, guys, I'd like to encourage you to head on over to my Patreon page and sign up as a patron. You can get great benefits for being one of my patrons. For example, you could stand a chance to win the new James Small biography that's coming out soon. You could get quarterly Zoom calls with me where we discuss Springbok matches, tactics, old players, the state of rugby in South Africa, all those sorts of things. You could get me to write an ebook for you on your favorite Springbok rugby player. And you can even get discounts on my soon-to-be-launched online merchandise store. In order to do that, you need to click on the link in the description area below. Sign up as a patron. It starts from as little as $5 per month. That's US, not Zimbabwean. And the reason I'm asking for your support is because I would love to do this full time, and I would love to go to Australia in 2027 and cover the World Cup for you on a daily basis from down under. I'll need your help to make that happen. Any support will be greatly appreciated, and I'll see you next time.